Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, I'm looking at, you know, where we are, all of the stories, the Facebook, the Pandora Papers, the fact that we're still not any closer to getting a infrastructure bill passed through, and it's all just drowning out the fact that we're being robbed constantly. And the sad reality is, like I said, I believe that eventually this will pass. We'll forget about it. We'll go on to something else to be angry and frustrated about. And we're still not getting anything on the infrastructure front. I'm here to share some thoughts of all of the craziness that we find ourselves in and just how strange things have gotten. I've asked John Nichols to come talk with us. John is the National Affairs Correspondent for The Nation magazine. He's also the author of The Fight for the Soul of the Democratic Party. John, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, it's great to be with you.
So I'm looking at the top stories of the day, Facebook, hate book, we might as well call it that. And hey, guess what? Rich people are hoarding their money. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, you know, in a weird kind of way, it's like, the sun came up today and it's another day. But I think that some of what we're getting here is important. And if we use history as a measure, we know that at times in the past where we have had revelations about just how crooked our wealthy are, our rich people are, that has made it easier to tax them, and it's made it easier to investigate them and to go after them. And so I think I see this moment as an opportunity. We are being given information that we should act upon, and the action that we take is very logical. As regards to Pandora revelation, we should be doing what President Biden and, frankly, some Democrats in the Senate, Bernie Sanders and others, have proposed, which is to beef up that section of the IRS that goes after the very rich. And we know that when you put IRS forensic investigators on the task, one bureaucrat, for lack of a better term, hired at a very small amount of money can bring in tens of millions of dollars simply by following the trails and figuring out how the rich don't pay their taxes. If we set up an operation that was aimed at going after all of these offshoring schemes, after all of the efforts by which very wealthy Americans hide their money, and especially if we did that in cooperation with other countries that have already begun this process, the Germans in particular, there's potential to find hundreds of billions of dollars.
Yeah, there is. There is, John. There's potential. And I seem to remember this kind of like deja vu all over again, because when the Panama Papers dropped, I remember going, hey, we should be doing this then. And every time these revelations come out that there's a Switzerland around every corner where rich people are hoarding their money, we have this moment of, hey, we should do something. And then it just, it fades away.
Well, you're right. Although I will note that when the Panama Papers came out, there were different people in charge. And so there, you know, we always hold out the possibility or the hope that those who are in charge at this point will be more responsible than those who were in charge in the past. And, you know, I can't guarantee that. I mean, I wish I could. I wish I could tell you, you know, this is going to be the time where it all comes together and we're going to really have a revelation and we do the right thing. That's not guaranteed. That's about us. To some extent, it's what we demand. And, you know, I think you were hinting at this before in your introduction, that at a certain point, if those in power, now Democrats, do not crack down on some of this, at some point it is going to blow up on us, right?
It has to. I mean, because look, you already have people, John, are saying there's no difference between the two parties. They're both the corporate parties. They're both in bed with the moneyed interests. This is an opportunity for Democrats to step aside from that and say, look, we're really in a bold way going to go and crack down on this and bring revenue back into this country so that we can do all the things we want to do in this Build Back Better plan, so we can put Sinema and Manchin to rest. And we can really invest in the country and do the things that we need to do and hold people accountable.
Well, that is what I hope for. And I have to tell you, look, if we're honest with ourselves, we will realize that, you know, we're actually in a period of critical junctures right now. And we're frankly being tested. It's as simple as that. And the test is this. Are we prepared to govern, first and foremost? And I don't mean you and me. I mean those we've elected. Are they prepared to actually govern? Governing isn't about, you know, avoiding the issues that arise or papering over them or, you know, kind of finding some middle ground that makes everybody sort of happy but doesn't really deal with the issue. Governing is about seizing the power you've been given and doing things with it.
Yep.
Now, our great leaders, the ones who stand out, Lincoln, Roosevelt, and dare I say, although I disagreed with them on most issues, Ronald Reagan, you know, when they got power, they did things with it. They did big transformational things. They changed the direction of the country. Now, Joe Biden has not been dealt the easiest hand. He doesn't have huge majorities in the House and the Senate. But I'll remind you that some of our most dramatic leaders didn't have huge majorities, throughout our history. You work with what you've got. If you've got the power to do things, you do it. And in this case, what Biden has to do, and it comes down to him in a very large extent, he's got to find his inner LBJ, not his inner FDR, although I'd love it if he did some fireside chats and a little more communicating about this. He's got to find his inner LBJ, and that means he's got to recognize that it is his job as both President of the United States and leader of the Democratic Party to make the Congress, that is a Democratic House, Democratic Senate, do the things that are necessary.
He's got to get in there and start twisting some arms.
That's right. That's a twisting arms and naming names. Going out there and finding the people who are the roadblocks, and we know we can name them right now. It's not hard. Sinema Manchin, member of the folks in the House, and talking to them about, you know, the damage that they're doing. I'll give you an example. I don't necessarily think that Biden has gone on TV and say, boy, I hate Joe Manchin, or boy, Kyrsten Sinema is the worst person in the world. No, what he needs to go on TV and do is say, I'm here in Tucson, Arizona, and I want to talk to you about what the reconciliation bill can do for Arizona.
Exactly. They need to sell it.
Yeah. And
because I said this the other day. We're talking about numbers. We're talking about $6 trillion. We're talking about $3.5 trillion. Manchin's got $1.5 trillion. Biden came out with $2 trillion. Now we're talking about $2.1 trillion. We're talking about numbers. We're not talking about the things that this investment is going to do to make people's lives better. Nobody's selling that stuff. And I want to know exactly how you're going to make my life better and our listeners' lives better. That's the important stuff. He's got to get out on the stump.
You're so right. And you know, this is an interesting thing. I've got a piece coming up on The Nation in a couple of days where I went back and looked at the history. Not on theory, not, you know, oh, I think this might have happened, but actually went back through the records. You know, when Roosevelt was selling Social Security, he was doing fireside chats one after another. He was doing speeches. He was using every medium of communication he had to communicate about the importance of what was involved in Social Security. He did the same with the Works Progress Administration with other big initiatives of his presidency. When Lyndon Johnson assumed the presidency after the assassination of John Kennedy, he did an address to the nation, to address to the joint session of Congress and to the nation, and he went into detail about carrying forward. And much of what he talked about there was Medicare and Medicaid. You know, and he went into specifics on what he wanted to accomplish. When Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act, he did an address to the nation about the Civil Rights Act and about the voting rights stuff that was going to have to be done. And so what we understand is that historically, presidents who wanted to accomplish something, yeah, they did the backroom, you know, negotiations and maybe some twisting arms and things like that. That's important. But they also went to the American people and said, this is what it's about. This is what's at stake. This is what we're trying to accomplish. And I don't think I haven't seen enough of that from Biden at this point.
And I haven't seen enough, not just from Biden, but from the party as a whole.
Yeah, I
mean,
agree with you.
The party as a whole is already, you know, they've divided themselves up into camps and have allowed themselves to be divided up into camps. by Republicans who are saying, "Oh, this is just the far left's, you know, it's their wet dream wish list." And no, it's about getting college education for kids to get a community college degree, an associate's degree. It's about early, you know, childhood education. It's about getting granny some hearing aids and some glasses and some teeth. Yeah. It's about a lot of things that are going to make a lot of people's lives better. Right. It's not a wet dream wish list by the far extreme left.
No, not at all. In fact, quite the opposite. This is basically what Joe Biden ran on, and Joe Biden was not the left's choice. But more importantly, this is one thing I would suggest. Don't do what Bill Clinton did. And Bill Clinton would give these marathon speeches, sometimes an hour and a half, and he'd kind of list everything. It was the laundry list, right? I would rather see Biden do a series of relatively short addresses to the American people where he spoke about specific components of this bill.
Yep.
And like, think about the caregiving component. I mean, I don't know what your family status is. I know you reasonably well, but you know, I don't know if you've got elderly parents or disabled people in your family, or you know, folks that need care, or maybe even thinking, you know, about some point down the line where you're going to need care. But at some point in most of our lives, almost everybody in America's life, we intersect with the caregiving demand. We have a parent who, you know, maybe they're at home still, but they can't quite take care of themselves as much as they need to, or as much as they used to. Maybe they can stay at home if they get the care that they need. Maybe they'll go into a quality facility in their community. Same with people with disabilities. And right now, when that reality confronts somebody, it's a jarring reality because most people don't have the resources. They don't have the structures in place to make it happen. This $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill has within it, or has been discussed, you know, they're still sorting out elements of it, a caregiving component that could radically transform that for every family in America. If Joe Biden took 20 minutes to talk to America about that, in real detail, with real people, maybe even using whiteboards like Robert Reich does sometimes and things like that.
Bring out the flip charts from Ross Perot.
Right. That's it, right. I think it could have a profound impact. And, you know, do I think that the TV networks, which are, you know, just commercial operations, are they going to give him, you know, free airtime every night to talk about this? Maybe not. I think they should, you know, it's reasonable that they would give him time for an address to the nation, you know, kind of a scene setter. But then, you know, the Democratic Party, they're raising money all the time.
Yeah, but you don't need it in this day and age, John. With social media, we're the TikTok generation. It doesn't even need to be 20 minutes. You need two minutes. You need good explainers to go.
Maybe, I got a better idea now. Maybe he just goes on your show.
There you go. I've been trying for a year to get him to come on.
Give him an hour. Give him a little time. But you understand, he can go to all sorts of different platforms and do it. You're right. You're absolutely right, although I still think the televised address to the nation has some power and some historical heft. Bottom line is, what you and I are doing right now, what your listeners are hearing us kind of sort through right now, is the calculus. This is what ought to be happening in D.C. Instead of, you know, waiting. Oh, you know, did we get a little bit more movement from Sinema there? Did Manchin? Did he say something that maybe we can work with? Did Josh Gottheimer say something that might be, is there some indication? You know, maybe at a certain point, you just say, look, we're going to continue the negotiations. That's cool. But we're not going to just do it behind closed doors anymore. Now we're going to go out in public. We're going to talk about this stuff. Yep. We're going to talk about what needs to be done.
And you've got to expose the people holding this up, because ultimately, Sinema and Manchin, you know, in particular in West Virginia, which one of the poorest states in the country, and people I know who live there desperately need the investment and the safety net, because I've been saying this is almost a small reset of the last 40 years of Reaganomics that has, you know, just destroyed, eviscerated a social safety net that generations past once had. So for me, this is about, you know, kind of reshoring some of that up for future generations. And it's kind of our legacy going forward, John.
Oh, yeah. Look, I mean, here's the deal. This country throughout its history has had fits and starts. We've done a lot of things wrong, but we've done a lot of things right. And the unfortunate reality is that sometimes we do something quite good. And then we take two steps back. You know, you've got a lot of what FDR did, what LBJ did, to some extent the presidents after them. And then you get Reagan. He pulls us back a ways, and then, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the fact is that each generation has a responsibility to fight as hard as it can, to accomplish as much as it can. And we're in a point right now where the polling data suggests that the American people are absolutely ready, 100% ready, for an expansion of Medicare, for paid family and medical leave, for free community colleges, even more than that, to be quite honest, for caregiving, for child credit, for a climate core to deal with, create jobs and deal with, you know, the climate crisis. The fact is, the polling is fantastic on this stuff, and the Democrats have control of the House and the Senate and the presidency. Put those two pieces together, it's not complicated. It doesn't happen that often. Where the people are ready, where you've got the power, you know, this is the point at which to close the deal. And if you've got a couple Democrats that get in the way, clearly you do, you know, you do what you have to. I can tell you, I'm a historian of these things. Lyndon Johnson brought Southern senators in, and he said, you know, you're going to vote for something, and you're not going to like it, but you're going to have to do it. And he got enough of them to do what needed to be done that he, you know, like him or hate him.
He got it across the goalpost.
He got a hell of a lot of stuff done, including things that people were resistant to.
So let me ask you a last question I've got for you then, because this infrastructure bill, my fear from the very beginning is we were going to end up right where we are and we're going to get nothing. How do you see this playing out now that we've extended the deadline potentially to the end of October with some more wrangling? Do you see at the end of October things getting done?
We get the infrastructure bill one way or the other. It's going to come. That'll happen. It's at the end of the day we get.
All right. I love your optimism.
It's not total optimism, my friend. It's that I think it's because people know that at the end of the day we get the infrastructure bill that it's being held up, because people know that once it goes across the line, then it's going to be harder to get something else, right?
Yep.
And we need the something else.
All right, good stuff. That's where we're going to leave it then. Okay. John, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff, my friend.
It's a pleasure to be with you, my friend. Stay strong. Keep doing what you do.
Thanks so much, our good friend John Nichols. Take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.